This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. Shawnee National Forest, the only national forest in Illinois, consists of 260,000 acres of dense hardwood. It spans the width of the state from the Mississippi River to the Ohio. It's an ecological sanctuary and a source of natural resources. And it's those competing demands on the land, conserving nature, making it productive, that are at the heart of our next conversation today.
Some far-sighted, public-spirited citizens realized that future timber crops must be planned if we, their children and grandchildren, were to enjoy the use of forest products. Wood for war. Wood for peace.
That Forest Service promotional video dates from, I believe, more than half a century ago, the New Deal World War II era. But by the 1970s and beyond, the growing environmental movement in America was pushing back against the productivity orientation of the Forest Service. The Shawnee became a flashpoint in the early 1990s when the Forest Service approved a Missouri company to clear-cut timber across more than 140 acres. Environmental activists organized, holding a 79-day blockade and protest in the summer of 1990. It sparked a forest defense movement that continues to this day and is the subject of a recent documentary film called Shawnee Showdown, Keep the Forest Standing. Let's listen to another clip. This is a vintage news report that includes the voice of activist Jan Wilder, followed by an interview she gave for the film.
The East Perry Lumber Company saw, grind, strips, and stacks over 12.5 million feet of lumber boards each year. East Perry gets about half of its trees from the Shawnee. The rest comes off private farms. They would like more Shawnee timber.
Why are the Shawnee lumber sales so important to the timber industry? Quality. Some of the best hardwoods in the country are grown in the Shawnee National Forest.
There are thousands of people who don't want our national forest to be cut, sacrificed. It's only 7% of Illinois' 4.5 million acres of woodland. We've got plenty of timber opportunities. We don't have plenty of century-old hardwood habitat opportunities.
So we had a bunch of earth versus clumping around, camping out, and just firing up, just on, you know, getting a piece of nature saved. Just a little piece. We're not asking for much. We're asking for the last places.
We're joined in studio today by Cade Purcell, the filmmaker behind Shawnee Showdown. She's also a professor in the School of Media Arts at Southern Illinois University Carbondale. The film screened last night at the Spurlock Museum of World Cultures in Urbana. In the next week, it will screen at the Environmental Film Festival at Yale University and the Athens International Film and Video Festival. Cade, thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you.
Also with us today are John Wallace and Sam Stearns, longtime environmental educators, activists, and forest defenders. Both John and Sam were involved in the Shawnee National Forest occupation and have worked for more than three decades to protect public land in Illinois from logging, oil and gas drilling, and commercial development. John, Sam, welcome to you as well.
Thank you, Brian.
Listeners, you're welcome to join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at 21st Show, at 21ST Show. So, John, I'm going to begin with you. How did you get involved in forest activism?
I was a child that spent a lot of time in southern Illinois, in the Shawnee. My parents were great campers, and we spent a great deal of time in the forests. I went to school at Southern Illinois University and spent a lot of time climbing around the hills and valleys of the Shawnee. And then in the late 1980s, I discovered that the U.S. Forest Service was clear-cutting the Shawnee. And I found an avenue of how I could oppose that through a group of people called Earth First. And I went back to the Shawnee in 1990 and have been there ever since.
I understand you once put your body on the line in civil disobedience. Can you talk about that, your 30th birthday?
Sure. This was the day that East Perry Lumber Company was moving into the Fairview timber sale when it, after a 77-day encampment that we had in at Fairview, they came in that morning, and I took a bicycle lock and put it around my neck and attached it to a log skidder that had pulled up to the forest gate to go in and begin skidding out logs in the forest, and was eventually removed by a acetylene torch and taken to jail.
Oh, my goodness. Was that painful, the process? I'm curious about the moment itself.
It was emotional.
Yeah.
And so I and people were yelling, and I was covered with a flame retardant blanket, and you know, I knew what was about to happen, and so I thought, what can I do? So I just started singing. I sang "God Bless America" and "This Land Is Your Land," and that helped me. Get past some of the emotion of the moment as I was removed.
Sam, I want to bring you into the conversation now. What brought you into activism in Shawnee?
Well, as a kid growing up, I lived in a coal mining community and was surrounded by what I realize now were strip mines, spoils, and I rode my bike on hills left from coal mining and went swimming in strip pit pools from the mining process. But through the week, but on the weekend, my father would take me down to places like Burden Falls and Bellsmith Springs, which are now the Shawnee National Forest. And I didn't understand the biodiversity, the various components of the natural world there. I just knew that compared to where I lived, and as much as I enjoyed being a kid in the coal mining community, being in what is now the Shawnee National Forest was magical to me. And I bonded with the land then. My earliest memories are down there. My most positive memories throughout my life are down there. And I thought as a kid growing up, if it's this nice here, it must be really nice everywhere else. So I traveled around up and down Central and South America and back and forth across this country. But ultimately, when it was time for me to raise a family, there was no place that I felt more comfortable, more safe, and more at ease, more healthy than in the hills of the Shawnee.
Cade, can I ask you, what drew you to this, to telling this story?
Well, first of all, the land I live on with my partner shares a boundary with the Shawnee National Forest. So just walking across the land and into that forest is really wonderful. It's a wonderful gift to live that close. And I also teach courses that engage with environmental arts and media arts. And so I've brought the students into the Shawnee and was conducting quite a bit of research and hadn't heard this story. Maybe for, you know, I'd been teaching for years and then I there'd be comments about this protest that occurred. And once I began to meet folks like John and Sam and hear their stories, I knew that I felt that it was really important to preserve this this history. It's not a history that you find when you go to the forest website. It's not a history that's typically presented. And it's so important because of the success the activists had and the work they put into trying to stop the clear cutting of this forest. And so I decided that I would try to make a documentary about this important topic.
Okay, we need to take a break. We're going to talk more about the documentary we've been talking about. It's called Shawnee Showdown, Keep the Forest Standing. We're speaking with Cade Bursell, who's the filmmaker behind that and also a professor at SIU Carbondale's School of Media Arts. We're also speaking with environmental activists John Wallace and Sam Stearns. We're going to continue this conversation. If you want to join us, if you have experiences in the Shawnee yourself, we'd love to hear about it. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. Or tweet us at 21st Show, at 21ST Show. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Cade Vercel, the filmmaker behind the film Shawnee Showdown, Keep the Forest Standing, which was screened last night at the Spurlock Museum in Urbana. It's going to be shown soon at the Environmental Film Festival at Yale University and the Athens International Film and Video Festival. We're also speaking with John Wallace and Sam Stearns, two longtime environmental educators, activists, and forest defenders who've been involved in the Shawnee National Forest occupation and have worked to protect public land in Illinois for three decades now. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. 800-222-9455. Cade, before the break, we were talking about what drew you to the story. How did you go about putting it together? There's archival footage, old media reports. Some of it looks like it was maybe on VHS tape. Can you talk about that process?
Yeah, I love the VHS tape story. John had a paper bag of VHS tapes that he handed over to me, and I looked at the tapes. And they had mold on them. So I had to figure out how to get the mold off before I could preview them, send them out to be clean. But I knew that I was told that they had documented the newscast. So what they'd done was to take a VHS camera and shoot the news off the television. And so some of that footage is very degraded. But it's so good at telling the story of what happened during those protests. It really brings us back to that time period and shows the passion of the activists who were protesting the destruction of the forest. And so it was really important, important gift and important opportunity to figure out how to incorporate that footage and sort through it and pick out the key moments. And then Oren Langell from the Global Justice Ecology Project had, he was there. He's a nationally known, internationally known photographer, and he had these beautiful black and white photographs. And so he allowed me to use those. And then everybody had collected material, and so they shared their material with me. And so then I began to try to tell the story focused on Fairview. Now, there were a lot of events happening, there was logging across the Shawnee during that time, but the focus on Fairview seemed really important. That seemed to be the galvanizing place, and that was the moment when all the community came together, people began to live on the land and conduct their protests. And there was also a lot of legal research and action happening at the same time, which was key. And so I decided to focus on that place, Fairview, the Fairview timber sale and that protest. That's where I had most of the footage. But to also try to thread through the legal research action and the direct action in civil disobedience, that those two parallel threads were going to be really important. And so I tried to conduct interviews that really opened up that conversation around how those two tactics work together to successfully stop the logging. And that then subsequently there would be a 17-year injunction against logging on the Shawnee.
Yeah, well, and that, as you mentioned, that 17-year injunction, it was the result of not just the direct action in the forest under the vintage World War II parachute tent that was made, but It's also in the courtroom. And John, can you talk more about, you know, what went into that victory, that 17-year pause in logging operations? What you know, both the legal tactics and the sort of direct action?
The direct action really was a result of the incredible amount of research and action that went into the litigation. We had six plaintiffs that were pro se litigants, so they represented themselves and filed suit in federal court. And were working to get an injunction on the logging. So East Perry was ready to go in to log Fairview, And they had this lawsuit, and it usually takes years for lawsuits to be resolved. And so the only way we thought that we could give time for the courts to actually rule was to put our bodies on the line and try to get attention, public attention to it. But in the end, these folks did all this incredible amount of legal research, which eventually attorneys picked up. And once the attorneys got involved, really approached a different strategy. We were fighting for each individual timber sale back then. And the new approach was to sue over the entire plan that had all the different timber sales involved. And we sued over the Code of Federal Regulations 219.19, maintaining minimum viable populations of native vertebrate species. And actually had quite a bit of success with that, as well as the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. And
this is the metaphorical saving the spotted owl, or whatever the Southern Illinois equivalent was, right? I mean,
You know, we were fighting for wood thrush and Kentucky warblers, for instance, and as opposed to the spotted owl, and we succeeded. The courts agreed that the Forest Service needed to conduct more studies and needed to guarantee that these birds were protected.
All right, let's go to the phones. Jim is calling from Sherwin, Illinois, on line 4. Jim, thank you for calling in. I understand your dad was in the Civilian Conservation Corps.
Yes, he talked about that and how they did work down there in Shawnee and Little Egypt when they became, I believe, National Forest. And I actually have a black and white glossy photo, 8x10 of him, standing by a caterpillar that he used down there when they were establishing, I suppose, the roads and different things down there. But I know the CCC Corps planted a lot of trees around the area and even up here in northern Illinois back then to stop erosion and stuff, and for wood, I guess. And I just wonder if the trees you're talking about, if those were the ones that were planted by some of the CCC Corps.
All right, Jim, thank you for that call and that question. Cade Burcell, I wonder, do you think, or what can you talk about the history of the Shawnee and the CCC and whether those are possibly the same trees that were planted by Jim's dad?
Yes, I'd say they were. A lot of the pines that are actually being logged right now were planted by the CCC, and that was really important to allow... just what he says, actually, that it helped stop the erosion. I mean, that land was pretty much barren, and they needed to plant trees. And so thanks to the CCC, Sam, do you know how many people there were out there planting trees during that time period?
I know that there were numerous CCC camps who, in addition to planting trees, they did things like constructing lodges, Giant City, and... Mm-hmm. Pierre Marquette and various places. The trees were planted, as you said, Jim, to hold the soil in place, and they have done a remarkable job of that. When the Shawnee was made into a national forest in the 1930s, it was the Dust Bowl. We had lost 2 to 3 feet of forest soil, and the pine trees that your father helped plant were a species that would grow with that lack of forest soil. They would grow in the clay that remained in those Shawnee hills. And as I say, they've done a remarkable job about holding the soil, about bringing wildlife back to the area, about helping protect the water of the area. And we now measure the accretion of topsoil in millimeters per year. And that's trying to replace that 2 to 3 feet that we lost. So current Forest Service practices, since that 17-year injunction has been lifted, have reverted to clear-cutting and burning and spraying herbicides within the forest. And they're taking that land back to where it was. They're taking the solution that your father and other folks contributed to in the 1930s. They're ripping the scab off that healing land, and bringing us right back to where we are. We were. It's the clear cutting that's going on there now is bringing us back to the original problem we had, losing soil, sedimenting streams, and extirpating wildlife.
Well, just about 5 minutes left in our conversation, John. Let's talk about that then. So the pause ended almost a decade. The pause in logging, like I said, in 2013, or the injunction, I guess, was lifted in 2013. The activity has resumed there. Where do things go from here? Do you see local activism coming up again, or where are things now?
Brian, I can't tell you how impressed I am at the interest in trying to protect the Shawnee. I see activism coming alive. We have a proposal before us, and if I can, I'd like to, or before the Illinois congressional delegation, actually, and we are proposing that they introduce legislation to transfer the Shawnee National Forest out of the U.S. Department of Agriculture Forest Service and into the U.S. Department of Interior and create the new Shawnee National Park and Climate Preserve. And we have an incredible amount of interest being generated to do that. There's no mechanism on land that is more efficient at sequestering, storing, and trapping carbon dioxide than forests, than wild, healthy forests. And the best bunch of, as you mentioned, almost we're approaching 300,000 acres of forest in the Shawnee now. The best option, the best chance we have of doing that is to protect these forests and keep the trees in the ground.
Getting it out of the sort of agriculture department, Forest Service, and into the Interior Department, Park Service is what you're proposing. Cade, we're almost out of time, but how do you hope people who see the documentary, how do you hope it influences them?
Well, it's really interesting. It's not only the documentary, but we have a panel afterwards where the conversation continues. And like last night, and we want to thank Dr. Aguayo and the Illinois Community Media Project for hosting us, we had quite a good turnout. And so the film asks the question, what should happen to public land? And that's where it ends. Tells the history, brings us to the current, and then poses this question. And then the panel continues the conversation. And we've shown this film in audiences where there are only 30 people. And then we've shown the film and there have been audiences of 200. And at Yale, it's online. So you can register for that film festival and watch the film. And then there'll be a panel afterwards. And I think that this is really moving the conversation forward. So the documentary is a tool, but it's really the activists around the documentary that are making this movement grow. And I'm really excited about that and very happy to be a part of this movement.
Okay, we'll be sure to add a link to the Yale event to our website, 21stshow.org, if people want to follow up on that. We also already have the trailer up there.
Great.
So people can check that out. I want to thank Cade Bursell, John Wallace, and Sam Stearns. Thank you so much for being with us to talk about
it. Oh, thank you for having us.
Thanks for the opportunity, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Again, the film is called Shawnee Showdown, Keep the Forest Standing, still being shown sort of on the festival circuit, so it's not on Netflix or anything like that yet, but we will have a link to where you can find out more about seeing the film yourself. And that is all the time we have for our show today. Tomorrow on the program, we'll be talking with two perspectives on Ketanji Brown Jackson and her seemingly sewn-up nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. Senate committee is expected to vote on her nomination next week. We'll be getting two perspectives on that, both from Black women lawyers. That's coming up on tomorrow on the 21st Show. 21st is produced by Anna Casey, Aiden Choate, and Erica Scalise, who's also our engagement producer. Our interns are Owen Henderson, Zainab Qureshi, and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. can go to our website, 21stshow.org, and you can find a link to our podcast. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and NPR One. Just search for The 21st. And we do have links to what we talked about on the show there. Again, you can find the trailer and information about how to watch the Shawnee Forest film. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.